gracious, we are here. It seems like I was on this microphone 15 minutes ago. Top of the evening to you, and welcome to, I guess I'd like to say, a very special edition of tonight's Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz. I'm your commentator for the hour, Jeffrey Bennett. You're listening to us live on this 19th day of April, 2011, a day that has historical meaning for true blue-blooded Americans, or red-blooded Americans, excuse me. We don't care about the blue bloods because they're not Americans as a general rule anyway. I share with you some commentary to, shall we say, establish a mood, a thought process, as it were. Because this day in history, in more recent history, has other meanings, other connotations, other frightful, nightmarish memories for many of us. Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere. On the 18th of April in 75, hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year. He said to his friend, "If the British march by land or sea from the town tonight, hang a lantern aloft in the belfry arch of the North Church Tower as a signal light. One if by land, and two if by sea. And I on the opposite shore will be ready to ride and spread this alarm through every Middlesex village and farm for the country folk to be up and to arm." And then he said good night, and with muffled oar silently rowed to the Charlestown shore. And just as the moon rose over the bay where swinging wide at her moorings lay the Somerset, British man of war, a phantom ship with each mast and spar across the moon like a prison bar, and a huge black hulk that was magnified by its own reflection in the tide. And meanwhile his friend, through alley and street, wanders and watches with eager ears, until in the silence around him he hears the muster of men at the barrack door, the sound of arms and the tramp of feet, and the measured tread of the grenadiers marching down to their boats on shore. And then he climbed to the tower of the old North Church, by the wooden stairs with stealthy tread, to the belfry chamber overhead, and startled the pigeons from their perch on the somber rafters that round him made masses and moving shapes of shade. At the trembling ladder, steep and tall, to the highest window in the wall, where he paused to listen and look down a moment on the roofs of the town and the moonlight flowing over all. Beneath in the churchyard lay the dead, in their night encampment on the hill, wrapped in silence so deep, so still, that he could hear like a sentinel's tread the watchful night wind as it went, creeping along from tent to tent, and seeming to whisper, "All is well." A moment only he feels the spell of the place and the hour and the secret dread of the lonely belfry and the dead. For suddenly all his thoughts are bent on a shadowy something far away where the river widens to meet the bay, a line of black that bends and floats on the rising tide like a bridge of boats. And meanwhile, impatient to mount and ride, booted and spurred with heavy stride, on the opposite shore walked Paul Revere. Now he patted his horse's side, now gazed at the landscape far and near, and then impetuous stamped the earth, and turned and tightened his saddle girth. But mostly he watched with eager search the belfry tower of the old North Church, as it rose above the graves on the hill, lonely and spectral, and somber and still. And lo, as he looks on the belfry's height, a glimmer and then a beam of light, He springs to the saddle, the bridle he turns, but lingers and gazes till full on his sight. A second lamp in the belfry burns, a hurry of hoofs in a village street, a shape in the moonlight, a bulk in the dark, and beneath from the pebbles, in passing, a spark. Struck out by a steed flying fearless and fleet, that was all. And yet through the gloom and the light, the fate of a nation was riding that night, and the spark struck out by that steed in his flight kindled the land into flame with its heat. He has left the village and mounted the steep, and beneath him, tranquil and broad and deep, is the mystic meeting the ocean tides, and under the altars that skirt its edge, now soft on the sand, now loud on the ledge, is heard the tramp of his steed as he rides. It was 12 by the village clock when he crossed the bridge into Medford town. He heard the crowing of a cock and the barking of the farmer's dog and felt the damp of the river fog. It was 1 by the village clock when he rode into Lexington. He saw the gilded weathercock swim in the moonlight as he passed, and the meeting house windows, blank and bare, gaze at him with a special glare, as if they already stood aghast at the bloody work they would look upon. It was 2 by the village clock when he came to the bridge in Concord town, when he heard the beating of the flock and the twitter of birds among the trees, and felt the breath of the morning breeze blowing over the meadows brown, and one was safe and asleep in his bed. And who at the bridge would be first to fall? Who that day would be lying dead, pierced by a British musket ball? Well, you know the rest. In the books you have read how the British regulars fired and fled, and how the farmers gave them ball for ball from behind each fence and farmyard wall, chasing the redcoats down the lane, then crossing the fields to emerge again into the trees at the turn of the road, and only pausing to fire and load. And so through the night rode Paul Revere, and so through the night went his cry of alarm to every Middlesex village and farm, a cry of defiance and not of fear, a voice in the darkness, a knock at the door, and a word that shall echo forevermore. For born on the night wind of the past, through all our history to the last, in the hour of darkness and peril and need, the people will waken and listen to hear the hurrying hoofbeats of that steed and the midnight message of Paul Revere. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. And so, my friends, this day we recall those brave patriots who stood their ground against King and for what would later become their country. We also remember the horrors at Mount Carmel outside of Waco, Texas, and the atrocities committed some years later in Oklahoma City. And on this Patriots Day, 2011, Mickey D's is holding a massive job fair, vowing to fill 50,000 burger flipping positions on this day alone. Behold the future of America. That's my comment on that subject for this day. Thank you for allowing me to indulge. Some years ago, I was in Salt Lake City at a preparedness expo. My daughter, who was then, good God, I guess she was about 12, had gone with me. Something like that. And I thought it was good for my children to participate and hear others and see how many other Americans across this land felt and what they believed in. I don't know why. I came across a book, and I asked if I could borrow it, and I went out and made a complete Xerox copy of the book. The opening piece of that book is that which I have just shared with you, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow's. I made a decision many years ago to reproduce the book with some additional pieces. I called it A Patriot's Diary. Well, I never did publish it, and I'm not really all that concerned about it. I don't need that kind of notoriety. It certainly was never for economic need. If I had my druthers, I would love to underwrite the cost of getting this book published and putting it in the hands of every student in America. Oh, not the original version as I saw it, but it in effect became a history of these United States of America as told through its poetry and its prose, and yes, in some cases, even its music. I received permission from a number of well-known patriotic songwriters and singers, among them Steve Voss and my dear friend Carl Klang, in his song entitled 17 Little Children, which spoke of that final day in Mount Carmel. And as we later in this hour reach the conclusion of the program, I will share with you the concluding piece of poetry which brings the entire story full circle. I received a call on Sunday from my aunt and uncle who to tell me that they had driven to Reno, Nevada over the weekend to see Paul Johansson's adaptation of Atlas Shrugged. Despite the firm's strongly negative reviews, what would you expect? The theater was full to capacity. And from what we're told, this scene was true across the nation this weekend as the film brought in more than $1.6 million, despite only opening in 300 very small, minuscule theaters across the country. Still an average of $5,600 per theater, leaving it behind only the heavily advertised films Rio and Scream. But unfortunately, the quality of this adaptation is representative of its low budget and brief production time. The film meticulously retains the original plot of Ayn Rand's opus, going so far as to lift much of the dialogue directly from the novel. And yet, due to the large amount of material being covered, the result leaps through the original plot line in a somewhat disjointed portrayal, which can be difficult to follow. And while Johansson is to be commended for finally bringing Atlas Shrugged to cinema after four decades of negotiations, delays, and difficulties, we are told it is disappointing that the end result is not more impressive. That, to me, I find shocking, is because everything I have followed on this particular film, we were told, was going to be issued in a multi-part, which meant there was no reason for the guy to speed up and cram the entire book into a single two-plus-hour presentation. And yet, despite the film's mediocre quality, its end was met by a surprisingly response in Reno, Nevada on Saturday. You see, as the main character, Dagny Taggart, climbed a flame-engulfed hill to be confronted with the destruction of petroleum magnate Ellis Wyatt's oil fields, the lifeblood of what little remained of the American economy, she screams in terror. The camera pulls away, revealing Wyatt's parting farewell. I am leaving it as I found it. Take over. It's yours. And from what we're told, the crowded theater began to applaud. Well, some people of all ideological persuasions, including libertarians, find Ayn Rand's rather idiosyncratic beliefs and obscure moral code distasteful. The theater's reaction captures the hidden resonance of her greatest work on grounds she would never have completely anticipated. You see, many of the film's difficulties are less the fault of the director and more of Rand herself. The primary protagonists of the book are emotionless industrialists, stilted, one-dimensional in their behaviors, thinking only of metal and railroads and factories. Oh, Atlas Shrugged is compelling, not for its heroes, but for its villains. The book was published when I was 9 years of age in 1957. And Rand's description of politicians and lobbyists in a time of economic crisis is almost prophetic. The Washington insiders scheme behind closed doors to retain and expand their power. And in elaborate press conferences, they attempt to convince the unsuspecting populace of their legislation's necessity by vilifying productive companies and portraying their own destructive, self-serving designs as being in the interest of the advancement of equality and stability and progress. Equality for whom? For instance, in Atlas Shrugged, the lobbyist Wesley Mooch decries the capitalist Hank Reardon's invention of a wonderful alloy that is stronger than steel. And last week in the real world, Representative Jesse Jackson Jr. took to the House floor to declare that Steve Jobs' iPad was killing jobs. Congress must, according to Jackson's progeny, recognize that that's Jesse Jackson Sr., you know, the Operation Push guy. Jesse Jibass, excuse my French. Congress must, according to Jackson Jr., recognize that Apple is driving companies such as Barnes & Noble and Borders out of business, and the company should be stopped in the interest of fairness. I want to tell you, folks, Barnes & Noble is going out of business because, frankly, they did a lousy job of managing their business. They stopped paying their bills. This is long before the iPad came out. As a matter of fact, it became interesting because both Barnes & Noble's and Borders began to offer competitive type little pads for being able to read books on. I want a real book in my hand. I want to hold Atlas Shrugged in my hand, not an electronic device that will allow me to pay a fee to be able to read the book. Well, Jesse Jackson decried Congress for failing to foster protection for jobs here in America to ensure that the American people are being put to work. But they are, Jesse. McDonald's is hiring 50,000 people today. Oh, if I could only control my own music, I think I'd bring out George Jones singing 50,000 names up on the wall. McDonald's. The Burger Flippers, Patriots Day 2011, are hiring 50,000 slugs to flip burgers and take your money at window number two. Sheesh. I got a cough. Where's my mute button? All of this posturing is as if Jackson wanted us to believe the printing press was harmful to the economy because it decreased the demand for scribes. Such a condemnation of a successful business and a demand for protection of failing interests could easily have been lifted directly from Ayn Rand's novel. On the other hand, where the hell was Jesse Jackson Jr. or his daddy 20 years ago when the textile mills and the furniture manufacturing mills down in the Carolinas were being shut down and shipped off to China? Oh, but please, don't think that the similarities are not restricted to a lone Democratic congressman. Similar absurd arguments were bountiful on both sides of the aisle in debates about policies ranging from Obamacare to the bailouts, baby. You see, Americans are directed to believe that if you would just allow the federal government to act in order to prevent further change in the economy, then stability could be restored. It is this paltry masquerade of politicians feigning action, pretending as if they're giving it action, all the while granting themselves greater power in the name of equality and economic stability. All of these things which leads Americans to Ayn Rand's story. Oh, indeed, Republic rats and Democrats both put on a charade of activity last week, claiming to remedy our nation's budget woes. Both parties threatened to shut down the government over a series of austerity measures amounting to a final whopping savings of $352 million this year. That's $352 million out of a budget deficit of approximately $1.6 trillion, or 0.02% of what would be required to actually balance the budget. These paid lackeys for corporatocracy bickered over funding for relatively low-cost line items like NPR, Planned Parenthood, all the while ignoring the harsh reality that our public debt is on track to surpass our extremely gross domestic product. In other words, my friends, contrary to popular belief, Republicans and Democrats and independents and Tea Party top politicians sitting in D.C. have all managed to mortgage the entire household worth of the United States. Oh, come on. You think that when, what's the guy that's married to Hadassah? Isn't he out of office now or getting ready to retire? Lieberman, Joe Lieberman. You think when he switched his party from Democrat to independent that he changed his spots? He was just as involved with mortgaging the household worth of the United States. Ted Kennedy's dead, but he's just alive and kicking, baby. And what was the remedy for this self-imposed tragedy? They granted themselves greater power through increased regulation and rising taxes. And so with each repeated failure of federal action to remedy our economic situation, remember the key word here is reform. Reform just means they're going to dig deeper into your pockets. With each repeated failure of federal action to remedy our economic situation, politicians reveal themselves more fully to the American people as nothing but self-serving villains. Their strategy relies on the appearance of action coupled with soaring rhetoric, the polite word for BS, to convince Americans of their good deeds. Meanwhile, these politicians are gambling with our lives and prosperity, risking the well-being of hard-working individuals in thoughtless policies designed merely to secure re-election. Oh, you didn't realize that it was already election season. Oh, baby, when was election day last year? November the 7th, November the 4th, something like that? The next day, every incumbent was running for re-election already. Yes, siree, Bob. And so it is due to Ayn Rand's apt depiction of these self-serving villains that her novel has climbed to number 4 on the top sellers list on Amazon, that the film is likely to do far better than its mediocre quality would merit. I mean, my God, people continue to watch Planet 9 from outer space. I don't know about you, but I find that Americans are growing tired of politicians gambling away their prosperity to preserve their own power. Yeah, the exception is Nevada. They didn't get that tired of it. They reelected Harry Reid. The crowd in Reno applauded as Ellis Wyatt walked away, not because he is some great hero, but because they understood the pain of working tirelessly while a reckless and unproductive government needlessly spends away the results of your labor and rewards your hard work with mounting regulations. The idea of walking away has become attractive, and indeed, Americans are increasingly leaving the United States for opportunities abroad, with record numbers immigrating to Australia and, yes, even East Asia. And so long as Ayn Rand's villains continue to resemble the reality in Washington, my friends, the story of Atlas Shrugged will remain popular The average American may not be a powerful railroad executive or steel magnate, but most believe they are entitled to the fruits of their own labor. And many, but possibly not enough, are beginning to realize that their future is being gambled away by politicians whose only risk is losing the votes of the individuals who have already lost everything. And so, where is Lexington? Where is Concord? Or have we become so dumbed down as to not be able to think for ourselves, not be able to make the proper decision? Unbelievable. My friends, I don't know. Will America wake up? Is there a Paul Revere who would saddle that steed? That steed could be four-legged, or that steed could be a Mustang. We're talking the automobile here. Are we the Paul Reveres of the New Age? One if by land, two if by sea. I don't know. We're told that but 3% truly supported that position of freedom back in 1775. 200 and some odd years later, our population now stands at what, 308, 309 million? I chump change in comparison to what the Chinese have, but could we find that same 3%? Could we find that couple of dozen people to stand by the bridge at Lexington Concord and fire upon the British of our time, the globalists? Would we have the guts to fire on the Soroses of this world and all the rest of these hand-picked idiots? I'm not sure. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few moments with the second half of tonight's Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With the Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you or someone you know suffering from high blood pressure, cholesterol, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural way to overcome these health challenges? Extendovite is made from herbs known to help with these symptoms. Made from garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, and four other herbs, Extendovite goes to work detoxifying heavy metals and killing fungus and virus to enhance your overall health. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a two-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
With romance, too many bedrooms I slept in by chance, drowning out my sorrows, longing for tomorrow.
I think that song goes out to Betty and Rick tonight. Betty, if I'm not mistaken, if my memory serves me correctly, you're the one that sent me a note enjoying the Mel Torme, so that one's out for you tonight. In years gone by, as I would have total control of my hour on the air or 2 hours, whatever, it was fairly common for me to air a series of historical reminders. I first met John Stadtmiller in his previous broadcasting partners several months after the Oklahoma City tragedy. We're talking about the taking of Mura 1-2-3, if you catch my drift. The so-called militia movement, if that's what you wish to call it, I've never called it that. There are very serious, well-meaning, properly guided militia people out there who understand the real meaning of it. They need a weekend pop gun shoot where you call up your buddies and say, "Hey, Billy, get yourself a couple of six packs and let's go out and have us a couple of brews and we'll do some target practice with empty cans." That's not what it's about. And several years prior to that, I was working in an extremely large gold company in Phoenix, Arizona, who's better known for having more holes in their lies and deceits of rare coin sales than the cheese that their company is named after. At that time, on this day back in, what was it? You have to help me here, 91 or 92, I think 92, we were working in an atmosphere of some 40 brokers with FBI crawling all over our offices because David Koresh had contact with the owner of this company that I work for. Apparently had listened to his daily radio program and had agreed to give himself up, turn himself in, and call the whole halt to the siege so long as his message would be allowed to be aired uninterrupted.
And that agreement was made, and Koresh went back on his agreement. But then I'm sure that the bad boys controlling the situation, the murderous, thundering sons of bitches like Lon Horiuchi and the rest of them, excuse my French, but that's what they are. I'm sure they went back on their word. After all, they were the ones who drew first blood. They were the ones who did the first pulling of a trigger. They were the ones who basically burned 17 little kids and other people. Yeah, they were innocent. They had not been proven guilty of a damn thing. I was working at that company when Randy Weaver was being, and his family were being attacked and subsequently murdered. My God, we live in a society where government is run amok, economically, spiritually, morally, thundering, murderous SOBs, controlling people that want to control how every other nation on the face of the earth exists or chooses to exist. If a nation truly wants to unseat what we refer as to a despotic leader, how can we, as a nation, allow the leadership of this country to dictate whether Muammar Gaddafi is a despot and a murderer, or Saddam Hussein, or Mubarak, or anyone else? It's about oil. It's about Israel. It's about control. It's about water. It's about money. What makes us one bit different than the alleged designs of the former Soviet Union or Nazi Germany or Genghis Khan or anyone else who ever had the ideology of world domination? Jeez, my God, people, the Limeys had the corner on that market in 1916. Oh, yeah, our good friend the Brits, the ones that we decided to take a stand against at Lexington and Concord in 1775. You know, 100 and some odd years later, 1875. You know, 160, 170, 180 odd years later, whatever the heck it was, Great Britain controlled and had the controlling factor over two-thirds of the world. If the people in these other nations feel the need to overturn their leadership and make a change, it is up to them. It's not up to the CIA. It's not up to the resident of the White House or the lobby organizations or corporatocracy or Israel or anything else. It is up to the people of a sovereign nation to overthrow their government and establish a new government. Well, my goodness, Bennett, you got a heck of a good idea there. That's right. But do you think we got enough cojones to get it done in this country? Absolutely not. In this nation, we are made up of a multitude of different kind of people. Diehards, blowhards, and not-so-hards. It is appalling to me. And again, the children must wake to hear the midnight messenger drawing near. Again, through the night, comes a cry of alarm to every American city and farm. A cry of defiance, not of fear. There's hope for tomorrow. Our victory is clear. Remember how in the poem we've read of two warning lanterns high overhead, it was one if by land and two if by sea. Yes, again, there's a threat to our liberty. A flood of treason covers our land, let in by a stealthy pirate band. You must say no to that globalist crew. who in Christ's place lords it over you, who's made you a slave for society's good, brainwashed in school so you'll do what you should. Public policy's now the law of the land, a system of rules built on soft, shifting sand. The world watches with eager search to see what's becoming of the Christian church. Stand still. Be accountable to one sovereign God. Individually responsible as life's path you trod. Be that light from the hill with strong, steady glow. Then others will follow the way that you show. We're at war, and yet through this gloom there is light. The fate of our nation is riding tonight. There's a hurry of hooves in the village street. Truth is that steed flying fearless and fleet. In this hour of darkness and peril and need, a spark can be struck out by one simple deed and kindle the land into flame with its heat. For when light fills the darkness, our foe meets defeat. By truth and by knowledge will freedom shine bright. We'll ride through the dark, and when dawn's light shines clear, a nation of free men will stand up and cheer. We open this program with Paul Revere's ride. We conclude this segment of the program with the Midnight Messenger. Thank you for allowing me to do this tonight. I knew that I'd hear from somebody. Larry says there are no Paul Reveres today. If Paul wrote today, the people wouldn't respond. The ADL would call him anti-Semitic. Self-righteous people would call 911 on him. The police would respond with a SWAT team. He'd be tear gas, tasered, beaten bloody, transported to solitary confinement for life. Could this be the reason there are no Pauls today? On the surface, my friend, I would say you're absolutely right. However, in its day, in his day, Paul Revere had many similar fates to face. When one looks at the history of what happened to the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, it is not a pretty story. But I'll not share that with you tonight. We'll discuss that in July. The markets today were interesting. They rebounded. God knows why. I guess Obama went up and gave his nonsense about why the Standard & Poor's assessment of America was oh so wrong yesterday. What the heck is this headline? Average pay of the majority of CEOs at S&P 500 firms was up 23% in 2010? Oh, God. Dow Jones Industrial was up 65 points today to end their day at 12,267. NASDAQ up 10 at 2745. S&P 500 up 7 at 1313. Global Dow currently up 1 at 2148. Oil? Ooh, it's down 3 cents in the aftermarket, but it's still at 108.25. It's up about a buck from where it was yesterday. Oh, baby, you better get out and fill up them gas tanks, man. Don't ever let them run low. Over on the metals side of the aisle, it's been an interesting day. Gold was at one point in time Opened up a little over 1491. It's up here right now at about 1493.50 right now. Yeah, $2-3 for the day. That's not bad. Every $2-3 helps. Interesting up and down swing today. Currently down $1.20 from its opening of this morning, but still in very, very comfortable territory. Over in the silver side of things, you're looking at silver currently at $43.81 an ounce. Opened up right at $43. In other words, silver was up 81 cents today. Not bad, baby. Not bad at all. I mean, who's zooming who? At one point in time, it was at $43.96. Wow. We're just shy of $44. I remember getting an email last week saying 40. 41. When do we hit 42? Now we're just shy of 44. Rest of the markets, platinum up nearly $10 at $17.77. Palladium down $3 in the after hours at $7.36. It's not good what we're seeing. Apparently, there's some people out there trying to make nice with China. IBM's earnings were up 10%. Yahoo beat the street. Oops! Higher airfare is coming if you're going to consider going overseas. They'll stop you from getting overseas one way or the other. Argentina, Rome. A friend of mine's going to Rome here in July. They're going to make it pretty tough. You got 10 states in this country that are taking a real bite in the assets when it comes to gasoline. I mean, it's like... How long before we hit 5? According to AAA, $4 gas as a national average may only be a month away if crude oil stays above 105. And if the Libyan conflict continues, what does Libya have to do with the cost of oil on a global basis? They got more water underground than they do oil over there. We got fuel costs in this country ranging $4.17 a gallon in Alabama. Other states, it's below $3.50. There's no rhyme or reason. I remember as a kid driving through Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, a lot of oil being drilled out there. And in some cases, it costs more money to buy a gallon of gas in those states than it did in states where the product had to get delivered to. Ohio's in deep trouble. Price of regular gasoline there is $3.83. That's the 17th lowest. North Dakota's at $3.97 a gallon. Florida at $3.82. I'm looking at the picture of a Broward County police car. It reminds me of an Isetta out of the late 50s. Any of you people remember an Isetta? Gee. Goes on and on and on. Who else has been hit hard with fuel prices? Kentucky's at $3.80. $3.94 in Michigan. Why? Everybody's leaving up there. $3.89 in North Carolina. Of course, they just had, what, hurricanes or tornadoes go through there? $3.88 in West Virginia. Indiana at 404, the fourth highest in the nation. Alabama at 417, third highest in the nation. I don't know who the other two are, probably Hawaii and California, Kate. And some idiot in a chat room says, oh, gas at $4 is still cheap. What a bunch of idiots. And so, as we do each week at this time, I can only implore you, and you know what? I've come to the conclusion that either there's a whole bunch of folk out there who just don't like me, which is their personal problem, not mine. The average listener to this network has just got nothing left to give. They've got no money left to invest. They've blown it all, keeping the head of the roof above their head. Or maybe they went out and got themselves a new Lincoln Navigator because they had some hot chick advertising it. Or you're busting your butt trying to get food on the table. And by all means, please do that. These markets are roaring. People who bought gold and silver but 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, have already covered their spread and they're in profit already. I can't offer you the kind of prices on a British sovereign that I did in March of 2010 when gold was at $1,089 an ounce. And I was offering gold sovereigns for under $300 a piece. There's nothing I can do to reverse that course. Frankly, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see gold at $252 an ounce again. I could live for that day. Because now the dollar, in fact, I forget that. I want to see gold at $35. How about gold at $1,875 an ounce? That's where I want to see gold go. Because then the dollar would have real purchasing power. And we would not have unemployment. And we wouldn't have a depression and a recession. And we wouldn't be facing this dictatorial, demonic globalism. And we wouldn't have record numbers of people on food stamps in this country. We would not have record numbers of people unemployed, underemployed, and unemployable. But you get on down to McDonald's today, baby, you might get yourself a job. Yes, so you can get yourself a couple of free meals a day. You can flip burgers. Put them in the steamer. Maybe you want to go to Burger King. Hold the pickles, hold the lettuce. Special orders don't upset us. Do you want bacon and jalapeno we die? So somebody asked me once if I wanted bacon and jalapenos. I had to ask them four times what the hell they were talking about. Had a gentleman call before the program tonight from Canada, wanting to know if we can ship to Canada. It is the one place I cannot ship to. Not a single one of our suppliers will ship gold or silver products to Canada. I could do it personally, but I will not guarantee that you'll get it, and I won't guarantee that the customs and the duty people won't pull a highway robbery number on you. I know there's companies out there that have found a way to do it and get around it, but I won't take that kind of chance with your money. And you see, that is my whole mantra with Republic Trading Group. Anything that you choose to call and talk to me about, whether you want to, you take a look at the emails we sent out today to our client list. Yeah, there was an ad in there for today's special on the British sovereigns. Grab them. I mean,
is it too late to buy gold at $1,500 an ounce? Is it too late? Am I paying at the top of the market?
Well, you're too late to buy gold at $1,089 an ounce. You're too late to buy gold at $600 an ounce. But you're not too late to buy it when it hits $1,800, $1,900, and $2,000 and more. And the same with silver. You support the network. If you're out there looking to buy gold and silver, we know that you can go to any number of hundreds of other companies in the country. And you're going to get the sales pitch, and you're going to get your phone number, and they're going to be calling you, try to sell you some overpriced junk. They don't care about you. They don't care about your money. I saved a client $1,000 yesterday on 500 ounces of silver. $1,000. I gave him two options. Either one delivered him 500 pure 1 troy ounce 999 fine silver products. And I was able to save the client $2 an ounce. I could have sold the more expensive one, but that $1,000 is their money. Basically gets them about the equivalent of 3/4 of an ounce of gold for nothing. That's what I do here at Republic Trading Group, but you'll never know that unless you pick up the phone and call 800-691-7898. Obviously, you can't do it while I'm on the air. I'm on Pacific time, ladies and gentlemen. I generally get rolling by 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. I tried to go to bed last night at about 9:30. I was in pain. I got up. I went down, sat on the couch for a couple minutes, was flipping through the tube, and landed on TV Land. I'm glad I did. I got to see the 35th anniversary reunion of Welcome Back, Kotter. That was the best thing I'd seen on TV in a long time.
What?
Vinny Barbarino and crew back together again. That's nonsense. What do you watch that crap for? Because I do. It's part of my life. It's part of your life. Take advantage of our offering tonight. 7:34, the Patriots Day special. Pick up some of the British sovereigns. Let's get some of the gold back away from the Limeys. They probably stole it from us and converted it into something anyway. 395 bucks a coin in small quantity. Your price drops by going to an 8-pack, plus I'll get you Bob Chapman's newsletter. We'll pay for it. Start bringing the music up quietly whenever you're ready, man. You jump into that big 50-pack, price drops like, what is it, 9 bucks a coin or something like that? That's a big drop. That's a huge drop. You want to take advantage of it, call me at 1-800-691-7898. I'm going to be out for a while tonight. Leave a message. Phone's going to follow me. I'll be around. Crank it up, man. I can't hear anything. This man's running. Thanks for allowing me to share some poetry with you tonight and get some feelings of anger and frustration up out of your innards. So, we'll see you tomorrow night. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett.
Attention RBN listeners. The